it's your birthday. Poppin' Dr. Juice, it's your birthday. Gonna catch you up, it's your birthday. You can find me fishing grubs, looking for a chub. I got that latex, so you need to fill it up. I need to catch a bike, I'm into musky love. So come on, give me a bite if you wanna get bumped.
Musky 360 Records represent. We got the Northwood Shooters, rat-a-tat-tat.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, Jay Bird.
Steve, how's it going?
The writing is on the wall. It is late fall. It's cold.
The writing's on the wall. I never thought of it that way, but I think you're right.
It's kind of gross.
Yeah, it kind of is.
I was cold today.
Oh.
It was, I hate it. My blood is too thin from Pepsis and...
Your blood is too thin.
Everything
You're
else.
Just not used to it. You'll acclimate eventually. Oh,
goodness.
You know, it might be February, but, you know, you'll
by
get
the
there.
Time it warms up, I'll be like, oh, this isn't so bad, then I'm sweating again. No, it's crazy. It's just like falling off a cliff. Where I'm at down here in Tennessee, it is not that warm. I think we've got a couple more days where it might perk up, and then it's over with. Jay, you had what, high of mid-40s today or something of that nature?
Yeah. It's been in the mid-40s since Friday, I think. So getting that water temp down now, boy. Had
right,
some wind, yeah. Too, and everything. Cold rain mixed in there a couple days ago.
It's time to break out the meat and the rubber.
Break it out.
Get on it. I'll say this, though. We had just a gnarly cold front today. I was telling you this morning, Jay, when I called you, it was just like falling off a cliff.
Right. The first day after. So the first day of a significant temperature drop.
Extreme cold front. You know, just falls off. Shallow fish. Big blades. Top
Very
water.
Cool.
What Booker talked about on that tactical, what we've been telling you guys. I was doing it up north. Did it down south. If you're fishing this time of year and you get a cold front, get up nasty and don't be afraid to throw big stuff. It's kind of counterintuitive. The fall transitional period, you can really break the mold and do some things. Two in, three on the day, can't complain, you know, and it's just the nastiest of nasty conditions. However, muskies are going to react in a manner that breaks the mold for the rest of the year. And then once we have these fish move out to those deeper, steeper breaks, they're going to respond the way you think they will. But this is the time they're holding on to what little shallow activity they can deal with, right? They're
yeah, just like, good way to put it.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to go deep. Well, you're going to, but I don't want to yet. And they're going to hold on for dear life. So it's been interesting. I got a text from Herbie this morning.
Okay.
Another Donkey Konga on the Titan, or excuse me, Kraken. My apologies. Bigger on the Kraken.
Yeah, wow, okay.
And so he's just been going to town on that bay. It's just been amazing. I've had a lot of success, so that's cool.
Is he back in Canada?
Yeah,
or
he ran up to Eagle for a few days.
Gotcha.
And it was just like, I think he said, let me look. Let me pull up his text real quick.
I haven't seen him since, what, Tuesday when we were hanging out or something like that. But I forgot his plans already.
He says second cast. Backup. Sure. I mean, it's just a scorcher of a fish. So that's kind of cool, man. It 'tis the season. I know only a handful of us, just the two Steves and my buddy Tim, have the crack, and Jay's got one. But, you know, it's that time for that settle presentation. A bunch of people have been emailing about Titan fish. That's what I was thinking of that. Get up nasty shallow with these things. Put the shallow weight in it or no weight at all. And just, this is jerk bait season. This is topwater. This is blades. Get up shallow and go to town on them. So pretty much everywhere in the habitat range. Like I said, after it hit us that hard down here, I'm like, ooh, it's the time. You know, I would say next week or the week following, somewhere in that neighborhood, really dialing on the live bait, Jay. I would say the water temps, you know, if you had a high of 45 today, water temps are falling, but they're not down to that, like, absolute, quote-unquote, meat range. So it's not like...
we're there in a hurry, though. It won't take long.
It won't take long. When I was up there, you know, what, heck, last week? Whatever. Last podcast was from your house, so... you know,
6 days ago. Yeah.
A far different scenario. And things are transitioning in that zone across the habitat range. They're changing. So, again, it's not going to be long. Next week will probably be entirely different.
It's just supposed to hold here, I guess. Hey, let me ask you, what was your speed today? What kind of speed were you running on those baits up shallow?
To be honest, moderate? With you, no, pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
Pretty
okay.
quick. One fish was trolling.
Okay.
And that was 4-2. And that fish was on as a really nice fish, and it made a run at the boat, and the dude I was fishing with, it just popped off. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. The line counters I use are pretty slow, and so to catch up with that fish, it just didn't happen. But pretty quick. I mean, the fish that are active are active. The fish that are dormant, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yeah. It's yeah. Like, I don't know. You can't finesse him up very often, but you can find that shallow water bite. So, you know, this time of year, if I'm casting, if my boat's setting in any more than 8 feet of water, I feel like I'm out of the game. Right? Now, that might change next week. That might change in 2 weeks. This is the transitional period. I think this is the fall is a harder transitional period than the spring. And there's so many variables because, an extended cold front or one bad go of things and that really falls off the cliff, you need to be pattern. But, we've been telling you, and you get up, Shaw, I don't care where you're at. It's been tough when I was traveling the last couple weeks to keep up with Q&A. So we're going to hit it here really hard. But if you're fishing Wisconsin or you're doing that, what we talked about last week, that shallower pattern, and that's going to continue for the next little bit. I think you really have to have a little bit more of a fall off before we move out to that breaking deep edge, right? And yeah. One thing I would reiterate, got an email from a guy. Well, you didn't cover this, you didn't cover that about this lake. We are hammering what was going on with that shallow bite, which is shallow does not mean shallow cover and structure. Shallow is shallow in the water column. And I think that's what is lost on a lot of folks. Now, trolling today, I had a trolling bait going 4+, like I said, shallow as you can get. Okay? This is when I'm starting to run my shallow trolling passes. These fish, if they are hot, they're suspended or they're up in the water column, and they're looking for something that's moving and grooving. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. Well, I thought you made that pretty clear last week, but, I understand, and it's a very interesting direction that you took a hold of,
dude, when I was up there,
a week and a half ago.
I was just on the phone with Booker pretty much every couple of days. What are you doing? How are you doing it? What are you doing? And just smacking them like that and doing something different. You can usually count on me to do something different. And fishing shallow off that outside break, that first contact point, really produced a lot of fish. So it was cool to see. Other than that, Jay, we have a ton of Q&A to get up with. Guys, okay. I'm going to say this. On the road for the last couple of weeks, we get tons. I appreciate every one of them. We get plenty of questions every week. So if we haven't gotten to your question or if it's fallen off the cliff, I tried to get them all wrangled up into one big text thing here. If we miss it, resend it. Just copy and paste or get with us. It's hard to keep up with because the emails don't stop a rolling, but the comings and the goings to the Muskie Shop. The Diawas. It is Diawarea season, Jay. The season of Diawa is upon us. You got a new spinning reel. You got the Eliminator. So if you're looking for a Muskie class spinning reel, there's a couple here. What else showed up? I'll tell you what. I've been throwing that TWS. So you got the TW and the 5-3-1. That freaking Pro-Rex, the newest with the purple. Not into the purple, but it looks cool, I guess.
That's what I'm running. I'm getting one of those TWX next season sure.
My problem was my high school
Cadillac.
It's Cadillac. But it absolutely eats big blades alive. You don't even feel them. So my only commentary with that reel would be if you're fishing small blades with that 5-3-1, it's not insanely sensitive, right? So you you have to be confident that your blades are running. You'll feel the tension in the hand or that vibration. But that the gearing on that just absolutely hogs up big baits, which is cool. So it's a pretty solid setup there. So that's cool. What else showed up, Jay?
Well, Daiwa's released a new series of Lexa reels. It's like the 23 series.
And me?
And, they start at like 220. So I think it's replacing the Lexa, the current Lexa line, eventually.
23.
A little Lexa fuzzy 23. On what it's replacing exactly. But they look real nice.
It's a 300 series. That's a smaller profile reel.
And 400. They come in both sizes.
They have a 400?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And the 400 in a Daiwa is a little bit bigger than, say, a 400 in a Shimano, for example.
Not a bad price point.
No, they look good.
It's weird because you think about it. It's been Beasts, Tranks, and Lexus. That's been what? The last 6 years?
There hasn't been a lot of massive change in the high-end, low-profile reels. No, you're right. So
somebody's going to shake her out.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, you got a Kuma just over there doing their thing.
Yep.
But
I got some solid reels too.
Oh, the Daiwa Millionaire Classic. If you're old,
the old Millionaire Classic, the round reel. Oh yeah,
saw that on there. You know, so there's a bunch of Daiwa stuff in Daiwa Lexa line counters. You got this, you got that. You know, there's a bunch of different options here. So. Anyway, goodness, what else?
Poseidon, 8-inch Poseidon.
Oh, there you go. Did that? I was trying to think. I don't think.
I don't know if we talked about it. It came in about a week ago. Yeah, it showed in after you left. But finally, the 8-inch downsized version of the original 10-inch Poseidon, and they're going like crazy. I think we got a resupply coming tomorrow. So, stay with us on the colors that are sold out already. But we got more coming soon.
I'm looking. It looks like black is still in stock. Come on.
Well, by the time you listen to the podcast, they might be in. No, so.
I know. But black's out? Are you kidding me? There's still a couple black and a couple Cisco. That Cisco and that black are probably the two. Obviously, white on that. White Poseidon.
Yeah. But got some feedback on it from a couple of the guys at the shop, too. So they give them the thumbs up. You know, it's got a little bit different, more of a down nose angle than most other soft swim baits in that category, which are a little bit more glidey. So you have that.
Well, that's cool. I like it.
Yep.
It needed to happen.
We got a bunch of new Savage Gear stuff too, Steve. I don't know if I mentioned that.
No, you haven't. Oh,
there's tons. The suckers, remember the sucker, the 9 and 12 inch big lifelike sucker that they had with the two treble hook rig on the bottom? They redid the hook on that, the harness, I should say. So it's a one piece frame now, or it's a rigid frame. It's not like a pull away harness. Like they had some issues with that tearing and stuff. So they fixed that. I call it Generation 2. We got those. They look super cool. I mean, so lifelike. The finishes on them, amazing.
Yeah.
There's some other models that that we haven't had for a while. Some different pike, now, 3D hard pike.
Something I just noticed we hadn't talked about.
Okay.
And I don't, maybe we did, maybe we didn't. Is a Rapala Otis and a Rapala's P2?
Yep.
I don't know if we covered this. So
we did briefly.
Just for a second, I'm going to tell you guys. I have been. This is no joke. My Rapala X Pedo and the Otis, I bought mine off of eBay, literally came from Lithuania years back. I've been fishing these for years. That is hands down my favorite swim bait. That Pedo, like, they used to come, I don't know if they, JD, when I got them originally, they came with the paddle tail and, like, the grub tail. Does it come with they're just grub tails now. So, here's the deal. This is ridiculous. This is a hard front bait with a soft section, 8 inches long. For $24.99, you get a replacement paddle tail with it. It's an 8-inch swim bait that comes with two tails. For $24.99.
You're talking about the paddle tail version, yeah, the P2?
P2 or pedo or whatever you want to call it. P2. It comes with two paddle tails for freaking $24.99.
Yeah. Well, it's Rapala finishes, too. I mean, they're top notch. They look great.
It's a giganto company. I've done really well with this Live Roach, which is kind of the shaddy configuration, and Halloween. For frickin' $24.99, you get an 8-inch swim bait with two tails. And then you've got the Otis, which is this big paddle tail.
Mm-hmm.
Otis comes with the replacement tail as well. Here's the deal. This is not a rip bait, right? You're going to see that big paddle tail. You think you're going to rip it, or it's going to be like an old hard head or something like that. This is a ridiculous slow roller.
Okay.
And I've done so well in these, Jay. You brought them up and you said, have you seen these? And I opened my hatch on my boat and pulled out, what, 4? And I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen those, buddy. These are really well-made baits. The price point is ridiculous. They've been killing it on Pike over there. It's something to check out. If you like swim baits and you like that action, these are just Donkey Kong good. Plenty of belly roll and kind of that perfect size. And you know, you bring up the swim bait thing, you know, it's just like, okay, the new 8-inch Poseidon, that's great. What a wonderful bait. But don't discredit these Rapala Europe baits. These have been in Europe for a hot minute and these are good. They're dialed in. The construction, like I said, is killer. You get a secondary paddle tail. So it's not like you get one fish or two fish or 10 fish. You got a backup tail all ready to go. So for $24.99, you've got a pretty serious outfit there. That's probably one of my favorite things I've seen shown up. You know, you got a couple other things here. Meat grinders are back in stock. We're out of meat grinder season, but those are back in stock. I see the Savage gear. Jay, you have the 10.5 or 10.25 hardhead pike. And there's a 14 and a 19-inch line through pike. You're talking about Savage gear.
Oh, the 19-inch pike. It's amazing. It's super heavy. It's like almost 3 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's a lot of petroleum products gone into that bad boy, and it swims so realistically. Oh,
the 19-inch pike is sold out already. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Swing for the fences, boys. Swing for the fences. Man, I'll tell you, that's a wicked cool bait. It's not something I would cast, but if I'm like slow trawling, yeah, I'll probably do it. It's cool stuff. So, anyway, that's the interesting stuff as far as cool stuff's coming up. Jay, we're just going to have to jump into Q&A. We're going to try to catch up again.
Yeah, yeah.
If you've sent a Q&A question, and we haven't gotten to it, it's not that we don't want to. It has been the summer of craziness and the fall of craziness. Resend it. We'll get with you guys. We just got behind on it. There's been so much going on. Anyway, Jay Bird, are you ready?
Oh, I was born ready.
Here she blows. All right, Jay Bird. First one up, I screwed up already. I cut the name off of.
Uh-oh.
So if you read this question, it's a great question. I actually like it. What are the least utilized bucktail colors? Ooh. Mm. And you go, well, does it matter? Sometimes it does. And I've seen this work on Eagle quite a bit in clear water. Red. Talk about a bucktail color that, Jay, when you see a bucktail color come in and the skirt's red, you probably go, ooh, we're going to be
Red skirt.
Yeah.
Okay. You're talking red blade.
No,
that's old school, too.
No, you rarely see that. But red skirts, how often do you see that? You know, you see it and it comes in the shop again. We're going to be sitting on these for a minute.
Uh-huh.
Cranberry or red in clear water, especially on Eagle, is money.
Yeah?
Money. Clear water, red bucktails. Another one, and it's for some reason I've heard the myth, if you will, muskies can't see blue. I've heard that before. I've heard other stuff. Okay, fair enough, whatever. Blue and silver works really well. I'd say those are the two least used, least popular, but overlooked colors. I've done really well for big fish on clear water with red bucktails, nickel blades, blue nickel blades. What else? I'd say if you want to catch a northern pike, put a green skirt on, right? It's like
green with some orange.
Yeah, it's like all northern. If you want to catch every dink everywhere you fish, you know, the joke, I can't remember who said it, but like if we need shore lunch, I put on a green booker tail and it's like guaranteed you're going to catch a pike to eat. But that red skirt, booker makes one in the mag tinsel, like a black and red. Are just straight out red skirts, really not used that very often.
Red with copper.
Yeah, you see that a little bit. That's what's in the Goldilocks and, you know, gold and red or whatever. When
Booker, no, he's got an all red with copper. Booker does.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Good for him.
Well, it's a red skirt.
It's a red skirt primarily. But when Booker makes, like the Goldilocks bucktails I have are ones Booker tied, right?
They're the hair ones.
The tinsel.
Flashaboo? Okay.
Well, it would be Goldilocks, so unless he's got golden hair. Does he have gold? Where does he acquire his gold fur, Jay?
It's mostly orange in his Goldilocks pattern and the hair ties.
It's not, though. Not the one he makes. It's all red. Right. It is gold and red. If Booker tied it, it's 50-50. Gold. Flashaboo and red flashaboo, and then the production ones, because people don't like red, there's less in it because it freaks them out. And I don't know if the red at depth turns brown or whatever it might be, but that works. I would say a red bucktail is probably the least utilized, or a red tinsel skirt is the least utilized bucktail color. What would you say, Jay, of like when a line of product comes in and they've got bucktails of various colors, what's the least selling or the one that people don't gravitate to as much?
Well, we tend to avoid colors that aren't going to sell great.
Right.
But yeah, a good example would be an all yellow skirt.
Yeah.
Not chartreuse, but yellow. All yellow. And there's obviously people that do well with them, and but not a lot of people offer. I'm not talking chartreuse. I'm talking
because there's like, back to the Booker, there's like he calls it Elvis, which is like a chartreusey transparent, but like yellow. Although, back to the fur, I've done really well on like the yellow 700s and the yellow 10 bucks. I think they made a yellow 10 buck, but like a yellow hair, deer hair skirt. I've done well on over the years. It's interesting.
Yeah. Most everyone blends it in with a lot of orange, though. You know, to get a kind of a fire tiger, super bright neon, you know, complete look opposite of a natural look to it. Because obviously, you know, if you want to stand apart from the crowd, you know, black bucktails rule. Or black with a little bit of accent of a different color. I mean, I'm predominantly dark, just black. You can't beat it, and they catch fish. But a majority of people are going to be using and utilizing that kind of color. And white skirt stuff, too.
I just found it.
A lot of people do really well. You do really well with white skirts.
Well, white skirts do really well. White marabou does really well. It's just, think of it's all belly. I just found the email. So that's Jeff. He says, long time listener, great Topsy Club podcast, for one time texture, and this is the guy who wrote that, sorry about that, and he's asking, you know, clean and stained water, whatever it is. He says obviously they don't catch fish. I deleted this email. What is that? Looking for a perspective of the vibration of a double eight or double ten. Oh, so what's the difference between eights and tens as far as attention getter? The collar more important than fisherman than the fish? Collar is more important to the purchaser, right? Like Jay just said, flat out. Let's say I started Steve's Bucktail Company, Jay, right? And I go, Steve's Bucktail Company, and I offer 49 and a half collars, right?
Okay.
Well, there's four people that handle any kind of ordering at the Muskie shop, right? And of those four people, Jay and Tom and Jim, Jody to a lesser extent, sort of go over that, and you historically look at what people will buy versus what the fish want. It's just a sad nature of the beast. And that's, I think, what I was getting at with Jay is, like, if Jay's placing an order with Steve's Bucktail Company, I don't know, 49 colors or 49 and a half colors, just to be weird. Our order, I offer 49 colors. You're going to order stuff that people are going to buy. You know that they're going to want black and nickel, black and black, black and orange, white and silver, you know, down the line. When you get into, you know, space monkey chartreuse menagerie, where's that going to work? So it's not that these colors don't work. You have to provide what people want in a retail setting. However, people gravitate to the same things, and the shop's always trying to branch out. We're all, you know, you always open, Jay, to something different. However, you can't bring in 200 pieces of something if 10 guys think it's good. And so,
yeah, there's a give and take. There's a give and take, we want variety, obviously.
Well, I'm just being as honest as we can, where it's not that it won't work. It's a matter of, you can't pump five figures into something that nobody will buy, and you have to sell them on it. You know, there's only, people get very confident with things, or people want things. So what you see as popular versus what muskies will eat, there's a difference, right? Red, blue, yellow, green. And I'm talking, like, as far as a dominant skirt color, take a bad rep, right? Black, purple, silver, what else?
Short, white.
White, like a fire tiger skirt, people eat it up alive. Gotta have it.
Yummy.
Yummy. They want them. They sell freaking 50 to 1, you know, for every 50 black bucktails that go out, there might be one red. So, you know, you look at that volume. So, yes, there's a difference between what will work and what people want to purchase. And so you're providing that, and then it skews it, right? It skews what works by what is popular. So what is popular might not be the most effective, but I don't, you get where I'm going, Jay? It's just like, you know, this is the popular thing to throw, therefore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, equally as important is the blade color to consumers as well. I mean, I say it's 50-50, and it's probably 50-50 to the fish, too. So start talking about all those combinations that are possible.
There's a million combinations for bucktails, and the thing I would say is this. Pressured fish, and I just looked at where he's fishing. If you're fishing truly, truly pressured waters, right? Monona, Jay. There's a little pressure there.
Southern Wisconsin.
Right? Yep. Or anything down there. Metro water, Minnesota.
Yeah.
It sees pressure. It sees intelligent pressure. My good friend Bob Klinesworth said, if you don't have a perfect figure eight every time, you're not going to catch them. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no mistakes to be made on Metro Water or wherever, some of these places.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen in my experience, pressure water, you better get rid of that flashy shit on your blades. They've seen it.
Oh, the prism type tape?
That? No, or nickel or gold. You better go.
Oh, they want it painted.
You want a painted or a powder coat or something with less flash. So,
okay.
I've always seen that blackout blades do really well in odd colors, right? So, you know, if I was on highly pressured clear water, I might go red and blackout blades. I might go red and orange blades because the coating on the blade reduces flash. And if you go, what every muskie on planet Earth in any body of water that sees any modicum of pressure has seen black and nickel, right? They've seen fire tiger. They've seen flashy, 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 bright, 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 bright. I'm probably going to darken my stuff up and get away from the flash. So I have the vibration minus the flash with profile. That would be my thought process. And I'm sort of going down the rabbit hole or getting in a different headspace on this of skirts. So on any given day that musky fishing is happening, I would say 99% of anglers, right? If we, let's say on any given day, there, let's say, Jay, there's 10,000 musky anglers targeting muskies, right? That might be a mm-hmm. really low number. It might be high. I don't know. Let's say there's 10,000.
Okay.
You know, 9,990 are throwing blades in topwater in July and August, right? And I'm making this up, guys. It's not real data, but it's just a thought process.
It's not real data. Okay.
But of these people throwing blades, you know, most of them are going with things they're quote unquote confident in. Black, nickel, right? Silver, yep. Nickel.
Yeah, sure.
They're going black topwater. They're going for home run stuff that will work a lot of times. If presentation-wise, you can't beat them, but you got to join them. Because there's times that blades and topwater can't be beat, right? I mean, the entire premise of this podcast has been for years, I don't need to teach you how to throw blades and topwater very often or talk about it, right?
Yeah, when they're snapping left and right. I mean, anyone could do that, right, hopefully. Throw it out, experience.
Right, throw it out, turn the handle, grandma caught one. Go Ethel. But if that is happening, how do we differentiate from the rest of the crew? Now, what you'll see is this stagger blade thing that's happening. 8.9s, 9.10s, you know, 8.7s, willow this, blah, 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 blah.
Right, right.
You can mix it up with stagger blades, and you can get away from what everybody else is throwing by using coated blades of varying sizes. So what I'm getting at, if the majority of people are throwing bucktails, the majority of them are throwing nickel blades. Most of them are throwing nickel blades. So get away from that. Now get away from black. I truly believe the reason purple has taken off so much is because black is so beat to death. Right? Over the last few years, I've seen a lot of trophy class fish taken on purple. Right? A lot of old fish, a lot of big fish, and you know, is it different? What is it? Is purple so diametrically different from black, or is it a flashy thing? But mix it up in your blade game. So I love what he asked. What can I do that's different? So reds, blues, greens, coated blades, and combinations thereof. That's where I would be at. But where I'm going at the whole thing is skirting material. So everybody's throwing nickel and they're throwing flashaboo. Right, so of your 10,999999 are throwing nickel flashaboo something. So let's throw a coated blade and possibly throw a different skirting material. Let's throw hair and let's throw marabou. Right, I truly believe that marabou is the most underrated bucktail material there is. Nobody pays attention to it. It's a pain in the butt. If you don't dry it off, it'll rot off the bucktail. So not a lot of people want to fool with it. It's a smaller, more flowing profile. So that's something to consider when you're throwing blades. Jay, what else would you add to that? What are you thinking?
Well, you mentioned the stagger blade option stuff, and that is truly a trend that is just absolutely taken off. There are more manufacturers adding stuff, and there will be more manufacturers adding to their lineup come 2024. Folks, I'm working on the catalog already. You know, and I'm seeing the new stuff in development and samples coming in, and you know, we're deciding what to put in to the print catalog and such. And that's a big trend because the response on it has been great. I mean, people are coming back and they want another, or they want a different size combination, right, or they're trying more, or they're getting, you know, extra colors in that model that they caught fish for them. So it's really cool to see.
Jay, that's why I'm excited to announce my new bait, which is a single 5 and a 13 combo. It's the 5-13 combo.
Called the Huey.
It's called the Huey. Basically, it just rolls over and will twist your lineup. Anyway, William.
Yeah, hey.
Steve and Jay, I hail from the land of smoking Pepsi instead of drinking it. And Tiger's Not Purebreds, Colorado. Well, chief up for us, buddy. Whatever. I'm losing my effing mind. I work 70 hours Monday through Friday. Saturday and Sunday is really my only time to fish. I missed two while bass fishing, but have never been able to put one in my boat despite trying all summer. Both broke off. I've not been able to replicate. I lose sleep over catching one of these fish and the thought of catching any muskie gets me through the grueling work week. Well, congratulations. You know what? I'm going to say this. He loves the podcast. Meow. And muskie is your game. This is his exception. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit of this. God bless you guys. You know, thank you for listening and thank you for letting us be a part of your world. I read these emails, Jay, we get them all the time where people say wonderful things to us. We're talking about some great emails we got earlier this week. Thank you for making us part of your fishing journey. We wouldn't do it if it wasn't for stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes you're out there and you're grinding 70 hours a week to pay the bills. And if we can make you laugh once or twice, we've done our job. That's all that matters.
Right.
He's talking about a reservoir. I'm not going to name it. It's in Colorado. I actually have a client that's been there. I've not been to this one, but it's the most pressured musky spot for tigers in Colorado.
Okay. That doesn't sound like a plus.
Right. Hold on. Very shallow. Weed 2-4 forage basis. Suckers. Stock trout. Panfish. Trout, micro, medusa, bulldog, chevy. I'm reading fan, casting shell, mid deep, and trawling. Okay. So, I'm just going to, Liam, I'm just going to break this down. So, Liam is fishing out of a small vessel. He's fishing pressured water for tigers, right? But in an area where the knowledge base is probably relatively limited. In Colorado, it's not like, and I'm not denigrating, there might be a 400, in the state of Colorado, there might be 400 serious musky anglers, right, Jay? Probably, literally. I've had a few on my boat, and they're like, oh, we get them this, then that, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I imagine that reservoir is getting trout fished hard. Is
right, that the main? And trout and whatever movie. Here's what I'm going to tell you, dude. I had to shift gears when I went to the West Coast for the tigers. First and foremost, Jay, are you ready to hear something that will make you sick to your stomach?
Yeah, I guess. Go ahead.
Don't waste your time figure eighting. Won't happen, right? Clear water, tiger muskies, figure eights, do a lazy Jane cast again. Oh, my God. Ah! Jay, it's killing me.
Well, I've heard that. I mean, it's a low percentile on the figure eights on those hybrids out there. It's
not low percentile. Come on.
Just like zero?
Stop being judicious or trying to wax eloquent. It's not going to happen. They break off 10 feet from the bump. Here's what I want you to do. Listen to me and listen well. I want you to get a double eight bucktail, preferably say, let's say a MEPS flashaboo. It's great running bait with orange blades and the black and orange skirt. I want you to get one of those. I want you to acquire a jointed depth rater with black perch. Okay? And then I want you to make sure that you have a 5-inch Joe Booker shallow rater in some kind of flashy. They have the hollow flash, right, Jay? Whatever. What's the holographic Joe Booker shallow rater?
In those prism patterns, you mean?
Yeah, prism.
Yeah, they got a flashy one would be Fire Tiger.
Fire Tiger.
Yeah.
I want you to read everything about how to work these baits and work them shallow. Now, I want your boat positioned in the deepest water you can get in that allows you to hit the shallow littoral zones. Stop slowing down. Stop listening to what I say about slowing down. Tigers want it mean and aggressive most of the time. Okay? So, we need to focus on mid-cast triggers with tiger muskies. It's a weird scenario. Another bait you could add, I'm not trying to self-aggrandize, would be a meat grinder. And I say that because of the mid-cast trigger thing. So let's say we're in Colorado and we're throwing up on the edge. And the water on these bodies of water way deeper than what we deal with in the Midwest, Jay. From south to Midwest. From Tennessee to Minnesota, way deeper. tigers can run deeper than true muskies quite often. What I want you to do is focus on speed in the shallows, mid speed to high speed. As we get up to where we know the first break is, we're going to let these baits fall, which is going to rip, slow down, or do something and work on a triggering mechanism there. And as we get back to the boat, we need to do something interesting. So let's say we take this depth threader and we throw it up shallow. We rip it down, let it come up, rip it down, let it come up. Then we burst it. We burst it. We burst it. When we're in that open water where your boat might be in 20, 25, 30, you might be over 80 feet of water from the shallows. You need to do something interesting, which could be anything from the likes of ripping it down and then ripping it up or something interesting 20, 30 feet off the boat. Okay. Get that handful of baits, fish with speed, and fish tight to cover with your boat over open water. It seems like those tigers are going to respond to big speed and bright, nasty colors more so than anything, right? That seems to be the ticker for those fish. So think about that. Just sort of kick it up a notch. Let me know. You can get a hold of me. Just give me a holler and we will go from there. I hope it helps because the tigers are so different. Jay, it's so strange. I've done it. It's just a different ball game. You have to readjust your headset. You really do. I mean, it's the same, but it's not. It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. I mean, we've got them in our lakes around here, but you can't really target them. Catch them by accident.
Dude, the stalker tigers are different. It's like stock muskies are different than pure muskies or natural muskies. Stalker tigers get big and, like, when we're talking Colorado, like, I think the Colorado state record is, like, 40 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go west, it gets bigger. These fish have never existed there. They have nothing but freaking 12 and 18 inch trout to eat and squaw fish and suckers out the wazoo.
Put on the pounds,
and they have gigantic deep open water. They are the apex predator in that environment. It's an entirely different ball game. Anyway, Sam, Steve, you never talked about podcasters. Hold on. I can't talk. Steve, you never mentioned a podcaster to call you for guide trips. You never mentioned it, but I want to go with you. Is that weird? Is it uncomfortable for podcasters to touch? But no. Okay, I'm going to stop this. Sam, a lot of podcasters have reached out to me over the years for guide trips. That's what I'm here for. I'm easy to get a hold of. You can find me via my website, TennesseeMuskieFishing.com. The reason I don't talk about it is every other podcast is, "Hi, my name's Mitch Tomlinson. I guide on this with the Susquehanna Reservoir, and you can reach me at 929-999. Come out for a good time." That's every other podcast, Jay. 45 minutes to listen to some dude you don't care about going, "Yeah, this is what I know about my lake I fish. I'm really nervous. Thank you for having me." I'm not going to do that, dude. If you want to go on a trip with me, give me a holler. What's next? Up next, I make fun of everyone.
What?
What? That's what you get to hear on the boat with me.
Sure. Steven,
I will shit on everyone. Travis, when you lose your PB on a botched net job while fishing solo, do you, A, weep on the deck of your boat in the fetal position, B, blame it on your fishing partner because he wasn't there, C, abuse some Pepsi when you get home, D, all the above? You know what, Travis? I'm a man. Men don't cry. Men compartmentalize and drink until they die. So what I want you to do is drink more Pepsi. Compartmentalize your rage until it kills you.
Or brush it off and then focus on getting that bad boy back.
It doesn't matter. You know what?
Focus.
I lost it. I've told Jay, I think I told it on the pod. I lost it a fish that was ridiculous on Wabagoon this year. And you know what? I laughed it off and said, you know what? What an amazing moment where I got to see something that incredible in nature.
Yeah.
And I sat down, chilled out for a minute and smiled, and that was it. How you lose fish is way more interesting. Oh, okay. Rabbit hole, Jay. Are you ready? Put on the cottontail.
I guess.
Here's Jay putting on the cottontail because Steve's going down the rabbit hole.
Oh, boy.
I don't give a shit about watching someone catch a fish. I know more about you by watching you lose one. And I'm not talking like guide clients. I'm talking like the real guys, right? Like, I mean, like, not the real. That's stupid. I'm drunk. Like the professionals, quote unquote. There's some man children out in that world. They're throwing around. Just like, dude, no one cares. You lost a fish. Petulant children. And no one loves a petulant man, baby. Lose a fish with dignity. It's more impressive. Stoicism will get you further in life than throwing fits. Mark, hi. I was wondering if glide baits are effective in the fall. Central Wisconsin. If you could point me in the right direction, much appreciated. Yes, 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 and yes, Mark. Jay, tell them what glide baits are going to be super effective. Central Wisconsin in the fall.
Why? Because of the hang time, because of the speed, because of the tempo.
Hang time. Because of the presentation. Bang time, baby.
What? Shallow water level. Mm-hmm. And just off the brakes,
mm-hmm.
that thing hanging, zip, mm-hmm. zip, zip, stop,
mm-hmm.
let it pause.
Mm-hmm.
It's an irresistible presentation. Fish are usually in the early fall not that far off of cover. The cover's all really good right now. You know, it's not like all the weeds are dying and
right.
and everything has vacated the area. That's coming later in the fall, in,
right.
you know, post-turnover. So for now... Yeah, it's an excellent presentation, and I would say the majority of the time, you want to slow down more than you want to speed up.
Well, that hang will get you that bang.
Boom!
Boom. Weird baits in the fall, though. Often overlooked, often considered to be a piece of shit, which is wrong, Glide Raider. And people go, oh, it's the worst, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it. I don't care. Glide Raider's kind of gnarly if you know how to work it. If you get a good one and you get dialed in, that freaking hang time and belly roll on that bait is dynamite, JJ, this time.
Big profile, too.
Mm-hmm. Big bait, shallow, what?
Mm-hmm.
It's a man, I'll tell you. It's a different rhythm. It's a pain in the butt. If you don't learn how to use it, you're missing out.
It's not a snack. It's a meal.
It's a meal. It's when it comes to that bait, it's not you. It's like people are like, it's a bait. Why the bait? It's not.
Do you want a steak dinner or a potato chip?
Well, the thing is this, it's not the bait. It's you with that bait. Uh-huh. However, it's super buoyant, and you gotta figure that out. It's a weird bait, but whatever. Another bait that's killer this time of year, Riverman Manta. Shallow, big, 10-inch manta.
Hang 10. Yeah.
Cowabung hole, Jay.
Don't be afraid if those baits pop up and break the surface every once in a while. That's actually a good thing. That's part of the erag presentation that sometimes triggers them.
That means Jay doesn't know he's dealing with glutters. You can.
You can.
Low rod angle. It's whatever. Yeah, with the glide rider, until you get the hang of it, it's going to pop out and you're like, ah, I hate this bait. With the Manta, don't get the super shallow. Right? Do they make a hang 10 super shallow, Jay? Okay, because the hang 10's already shallow as crap. Another bait I like this time of year, and I would be considering, like, if you're going for like mid-sized fish, forget the hang 10, forget the glide raider. The 8-inch Warlock's pretty money this time of year.
Magnum Warlock, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can tweak the tail out a little bit. That's the only glide bait I've seen with a tunable tail that actually does something interesting. So get it, fish it stock, and then learn the nuances of that bait. And just get comfortable with it, you know. So Central Wisconsin, you're probably best with the mag warlock. I mean, they're so good. Get you a black one, be done with it. Get you a white one, be done with it. And then that's going to put you in the game there. Josh, I struggle. That's his only question, Jay. I struggle. I'm teasing. I struggle. I'm new. This is my first year strictly targeting muskies. Spent a lot of time on the water. My home lake is 30 minutes west of Greenbay, I'll leave it that way. I pay attention to minors and majors. I tried September shallow bite, tried night, a lot of boat traffic, anything to help. So he's fishing, he's trying all the tips and hints, he ain't scoring, right? What can we do to figure out where muskies are to score more muskies with majors, minors, all this stuff? Okay. We need to be moderately introspective of what we're doing. We need to make an assessment of where we're at and are we doing things correctly. Now, at times, it's important for us to be honest with ourselves brutally in our head and go, are we making good decisions? And are we making the right cast, the right bait selections, etc.? Now, all we have to base that decision off of is what we have heard, what we have read, what we have learned. Okay? But at times, it's important for us to just do an assessment and go, what's reality and what do I think? Am I fishing too slow? Am I fishing too fast? Am I working spots thoroughly? Okay? At a certain point, there is, say, the introspection of the self-assessment. If we have no basis of comparison, how do we know? So if I were to, let me say this. If I were to try to tile my floor, Jay, I'm going to retile the floor of my house. And I couldn't get it right, and things were going poorly, but I'd watch the YouTube videos. I'd listen to the tiling podcast, and it wasn't working out for me. It might be time to hire a professional. It's not something I've said very often, but it holds weight. So at times, to fish with someone else that is more skilled, I'm not saying a guide. Find a friend, find a buddy, find somebody who's had success, or a family member, or a guide that is skilled that can help realign your game plan. Don't keep trying to tile the floor if you don't understand how grout works, or a quick set, or using a trowel or a tile saw works. Make an assessment of your skill level. If you're like, I'm killing it on glide baits, they look great. I watch a video of Steve. I watch a video of Wagner. I watch a Booker video. I watch a video of this guy, that guy. And my glide bait presentation looks as good as his. And my figure eight as good as his. And my boat controls money. And my bait selection's money. I'm going to switch legs. Narrowly often is that the case. What it is we have a misconception of what we are doing versus what we think we are doing because we have no basis of comparison. What is slow? What is fast? Right? What is deep? What is mid? What is shallow? We don't have a basis of comparison. So at a certain point, we need to bring in somebody. Now, let's say that's not in the cards, Jay. Let's say this guy's like, I'm not doing that or I'm doing that. Black bucktail, nickel blade, speed and depth control, and throw until you get one. We've said it before. That's something to consider. Make a self-evaluation. Compare yourself to Joe Booker videos. The best thing I've ever figured out is watch Booker videos, turn the sound off, watch the action, watch the reel speed, watch the rod angle, watch the figure eights. Am I somewhere in that neighborhood? Is it that smooth, right? Jay, it's like trying to learn a jump shot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to watch me? Or are you going to watch videos of Kobe?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or a fadeaway? You're going to watch Steve Paul flounder in his driveway and Chuck Taylor's flat footed in my freaking Little Caesars jersey? Are you going to watch Michael Jordan? I mean, it's just like watch the best of the best. And if you're somewhere in their neighborhood on execution, and you're not fooling yourself, because at times we fool ourselves. We have this self-reflection of what's actually happening versus what the reality of things are. Be introspective. Question everything, but find confidence in the things that you're doing right. So it's not a matter of, you're doing it all wrong. No, not at all. There are things you're doing right, and there are things you're doing wrong. If the population density in that body of water is high enough that there are muskies and they're catchable, self-evaluate, make an assessment of what you need to fix. If you can't fix it on your own, you can't identify those problems, hire a professional. Jay, would that be at a certain point, Jay, your tire's flat on your truck, right? So you got in your driveway. Jay, you know I just knifed your tire is why I said that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got in the driveway and the tire on your truck is flat, right? Do you need a professional to tell you what is wrong? Hello? Well,
not,
wake up.
Not necessarily.
Is your tire flat or not?
Probably fix it by myself. I will have to have it fixed.
I just said your tire's flat. You go, it's tire flat. If I said, hey, your CV joint is out, do you know that? You see what I'm saying? There's certain points where we assess what's happening based upon obvious things and things we don't understand. Like I said, it is what it is. And it's not, Josh, it's a great question. I'm down the rabbit hole. It doesn't just apply to you. It applies to all of us. Where the way I became, I told a guy in the boat this today. I used to suck at trolling. I was horrible at it. I'd throw baits behind the boat while I ate a sandwich and never catch fish. And maybe every now and again, I'd smack one and I was lucky. And I went, I'm not trolling. I'm just going through the motions, being an idiot. Right? What do I need to do to fix my problems? Dan, how many times do you fish a spot in a day that you've never fished, but everything says a muskie should be there? Okay, how many times? We've talked about this before in some capacity. I'm going to target zones that check all the boxes of structural elements, first and foremost, the presence of bait fish, that adhere with seasonality. New spot, old spot, be damned. If bait fish are present, it adheres to the seasonal habitat or the seasonal preferences of muskies, and it adheres to the tenets of muskie structure fishing, I'll fish it 4 million times a day. It doesn't matter if I've never fished it before or I'm never going to fish it again. If those things correlate, it's worth your time. Now, how many times do I fish a new spot? Like he's saying, I will fish a new spot that I am positive that checks those boxes as many times as it takes, because there's got to be a fish there inevitably. Are they using this spot on majors, minors, sunup, sundown, sunrise, off times? How does this spot fit in their transition between shallow and deep throughout the course of the day and their pursuit of bait fish? Where does it fit in that program is the question you got to ask. So I will fish that spot until I understand when it is utilized by actively feeding fish, if it checks all those boxes.
Correct. Gotcha. I understand.
Is it a morning spot or is it a 4 in that morning spot? You know what I'm saying? Sunrise at 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. There are times that these are nighttime spots. These are open water spots. These are fall spots, winter spots. But they adhere to the Baker principles. That's what I'm going to do. So we said it before, I'll say it again. Let's say we find something that looks amazingly interesting on the boat or on the map, mm-hmm. On the water. Let's say we move one or we catch one. Go down to that spot you got this inkling about. Don't try to catch another fish. You'll have plenty of time the rest of your life to catch more. Go check out something good after something good happened. Don't go to amazing spots that you have so much hope and potential for when nothing's happening. Make something happen on your proven winners and then go check out something that's interesting to you. Tom, I was just wondering what butt seats you recommend. The one I have isn't very comfortable for standing or sitting. Any help is appreciated. I'm an avid listener, and your info has been a big help in becoming a better muskie angler. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Tom. Jay. Butt seats.
I never sit down.
Butt seats.
Don't use them.
Butt seats.
You do, though.
Welcome to Jay's Butt Seat Emporium. I like big butt seats. I can't not lie. Jay, butt no. seat. Sorry, gratuitous.
Well, works.
I use the leaning seat from Academy Sports. It's like $45. And so it has a curved back or kind of like this front thing. It's like a leaning set down seat. I've got mine pretty dang high. You could not sit on my front seat unless you're 6'7", you can't sit on it. And it just gives me a backrest. So if I get into choppy water, I drive my boat like a flamingo. Me and Joe Booker love high propped up foot pedals, right? It's got to be jacked up to the floor, you know, to the ceiling. And so if I'm doing my flamingo routine in choppy water, I need something to lean on. That's the Academy Sports butt seat. Even with inflation as bad as it is, I think that thing's like $45.
Yeah,
it's been a good seat. I go through about 3 a year because I'll put a bait in or a clown will put a bait in it. Last year, Jay, I ran so tight under a bridge, I ripped one off. That was kind of good gas.
Nice.
It's $45. Who cares? You know, it's $45 is like dinner for two at Arby's at this point. But that seat served me pretty well. But like I said, that's more of a leaning thing. I'm not sitting on. It's more of a lean against. And it's a pretty wide profile. So check that out at the Academy. All right, Jay, let's lay out one more gump.
Okay.
I've been dealing with lazy follows and some thick milfoil slop. Giant jackpots. The Havana banana, if you don't say, Jay. Giant jackpot. Havana banana. Ace baits. Top raiders. Are the only baits I've had any luck getting in and out without fouling. Downsizing these presentations doesn't seem to generate much interest. Are there any other options to remain somewhat weedless but slow things down? Pugsley. The Pugsley from Spanky Baits. Right? That's going to be interesting, that floating bucktail deal. Right?
Yeah.
Something that's not utilized very often is buzz baits. Does anybody even make a musky buzz bait anymore?
If you do.
There was like that, clack there for a minute.
Those are gone.
Those are gone. What's the
RJ makes some.
RJ's. So a buzz bait is like a weird, it's a spinner bait, freaking topwater nonsense, but they work, right?
Well, spinnerbaits in general, you can helicopter them around those globs of milfoil. Chances are there's some pocket openings.
Folks, we're going to go back in the Wayback Machine. Bob Mesencomer's Sloppy Pig, Jay. What do you think?
Oh, the old Sloppy Pig.
That's horrible. Surely. Don't buy one of those. So there's some things you could do with obviously, if he's doing top raiders and ace baits and jackpots, he's getting the looks, but he's not getting the eats. He wants to slow it down. That Pugsley, which is that wooden body bucktail deal, that's interesting. What else could you do here? Slow it down. So if we're getting into ridiculous land on sloppy fishing, you could take a Booker tail or a Booker top raider, take the treble off the belly, take the treble off the back, and put a giant 7-aught single-aught or single hook on the back, and it'll come through just about the nastiest stuff, right? So you got the one single seven sticking up, and that's interesting.
Yep.
But if we need to slow it down rather than those presentations, let me think what else I would do there.
Super top rater.
Well, that's
not those run slower than the single blade.
They do, but is it a downsize thing? I'm thinking, you know, he's saying downsize is not doing much for him, so maybe the upsize, the super could do it. Off the top of my head, other things that are kind of buoyant for that really low clearance. If I'm fishing nasty, nasty stuff, I've had good luck with crane baits and take the two belly hooks off and heat shrink the back one. You only got a single hook on the back, but you can kind of jerk bait it, rip it, twitch it there. The Titan Junior will come through just about anything. Now, if it's a mat, like if he's throwing over just like a mat and he's just got inches.
Yeah.
That can be problematic, but Titans are pretty dang weedless. And that's they a really slower are. Presentation.
I agree.
Because they run head down. So like crane bait with the hooks off of it, except for one back hook, or a Titan Junior are going to be my slowdowns there. Again, you can take a minnow bait, much like I said with the top rater. You could take a crane bait, super buoyant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And take all three trebles off and put a single, you know, maybe a five or whatever. Get your eagle claws out or a big bass style hook and heat shrink it off the back. And that's going to be pretty weedless. And you can rip, twitch, and do some funky things there. That's going to be kind of a, you know, when we're getting those follows on those baits, we can't downsize too terribly much. We need to sort of get outside of the box and tweak things out, right? So slop up your top rater, slop up a crane bait, maybe try and tighten the diving rise. They're pretty damn weedless. What else would come to, like I said, that Pugsley. One thing I'll say this is stupid. I'm going to give you guys a trick that is just ridiculous. I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it. You know the MK, the freaking bomb squad baits?
Sure, yeah.
The flap tail baits, right?
Yep.
This is not recommended. It will void your warranty, I'm sure. And this will work on a Smitty, too. Or any of them. God, why am I doing this? All right. So we take the hook off the belly and we take the spreader bar.
Yeah.
And we put it on the top of the bait. We drill a new hole and put the baits. The spreader bars are above the water. Right? That will go through anything. So bottom hook's gone. Drill a new hole on top of that bait. The spreader bars are above the water. This is for the nastiest of nasty, nasty, nasty stuff. Right? So the buoyancy of the bait's kind of screwed up a little bit, but if you center it off the top, basically this has the spreader bar on its back instead of on its belly. Or you can bend those up so the spreader bar is protruding above the water, but I don't want that wire down there grabbing stuff.
Okay.
And we're talking as nasty as it gets.
I imagine that thing would teeter totter left and right quite a bit, though.
Oh, yeah, it will. And so you can counterbalance that by putting like a little weight on the belly hook, which is going to grab weeds. But I would rather have a little teeter totter with a lighter gauge wire and all this stuff above. This is not something I'm doing every day, Jay. This is like the nastiest of the nasty of the nasty stuff. Dennis, last one we're doing tonight. Good afternoon. Firstly, let me thank you for the wealth of knowledge and information. Yeah, continue on. Thank you so much. When researching structure map, let's just say for say the lakes in Vios County, how up to date are these maps? In other words, if I'm looking at a structure map of North Twin from 1990 and yet another one from 2015 and another from 2022, is the basic structure in the lake going to change that much? No. lakes change very slowly. And he's asking if they update this, that, and the other. So the topography of a body of water is a slow, slow change, right? Unless there's a change in the amount of current, water influx, water outflow, right? So, you know, maybe a reservoir will change slightly, but it is a slow, low, slow, slow change. Most of these inland lakes, Jay, will not change enough that it matters for structure targeting in your entire lifetime.
No, and it's not like you're seeing significant, it's pretty rare when you have significant like water level drops or something like that, which could, you know, if a lake does during a really bad drought, like maybe, you know, it's 3 feet low, like legitimately 3 feet low.
Right.
Then you might get some current or something like that that might, you know, affect some points or something and shave off a little bit here and there. But
negligible.
No, I agree. Yeah.
You need flooding and you need eons. Right. So basically, for the topography of a lake to change, it takes time. Right. I would say eventually. Maybe I'm wrong, but let's say lakes slosh around, Jay, right?
It's a good one.
So, and eventually lakes will erode all the topsoil there and shift it around. Maybe it's already happened on your lake. Maybe it's shifted around where, you know, 10,000 years ago, the you know, there wasn't this or there wasn't that or there was blah, 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 blah. But it takes a super duration of time to change the topography of a lake. So if you have old maps, they're going to be somewhat usable. However, they'll be far less detailed. So what's great with modern mapping is the detail level. I would say we're at the point where you can't get any more detail out of your map. We might hit that plateau. Technologically, we always hit a plateau, right? I cannot tell you the difference between an iPhone 12 and an iPhone whatever the heck we're on, right? Doesn't matter to me. You know, men, unlike women, can't perceive that many colors, right? Much like muskies. Female muskies might see more colors than men. Who knows? Just making it up, but at a certain point, the DPI or the pixel resolution, whatever, on a phone, forget about it. I'm not paying more. You're going to tap out because once you have a very good structural scan of a lake, I'm done with it. It's not going to change that much unless we have a catastrophic event. Now, there have been lakes that have been dredged. Oh, yeah, that'll matter, right? Or lakes that X, Y, and Z happened to or whatever. But your older topography maps will work. Jay, I would say this. So the map section at the Muskie Shop, there's a couple little carousels and some books and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think they've rescanned those lakes in the last 20 years. Because they don't have to.
Not many of them. No, no.
They don't have to.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the rocks on Pike Round Chain have been there since the dawn of time. And so that's not going to change. Once you get a map, so get a map with the utmost detail possible and you're good for the rest of your life. He's asking, you know, if I'm home in his office researching in February, structure maps for breaks, flex here, you know, basically whatever. He says, will the information line up with his GPS and Lowrance? Yes. One thing I always recommend, and it's a super useful tool, is Google Earth for checking out lakes. Now, Google Earth does not have contours, but it has an aerial view where you can see obstructions, you can see islands, you can get this kind of world view of a lake, different times of the year. So if you're looking for rocks or hazards, check that out, counter against your maps. But get every iteration of a map you can. One thing I'll say is, so like with Lowrance, you have like this base map that comes. It's garbage. Right. Or you could get the Hummingbird card, the Navionics card, or the C-Map. So there's a few different iterations of maps right now, each of which will give you different detail levels. Right. So let's say, Jay, I'm fishing right by your house, Lost Lake there in St. Germain. Right. Let's say I'm or not that lake, but whatever. I shouldn't say that lake, but whatever. Pick a lake. Buckatobin.
Big Saint Germain.
Big Saint. There you go. Big Saint. I'm going to fish Big Saint. What I'm going to do is I'm going to buy every map card available to me. Amazon's a great place, or whomever, because you can return things easily. And I'm going to look at every map card. I'm going to find the highest detail map card of that lake. Right? What company has gone out and done the best scan of this lake? That's what I'm going with. That's it. Find as much detail as you can, and then you can compare and contrast, because some lake maps will have creek channels, some won't. Some will have community edits where it shows, you know, here's Ricky's musky hole, right? Well, why is that called Ricky's musky hole? Well, we might want to check that out. Or some will have, you know, historical data. Some will have sunken boats. Some will have whatever.
Okay.
So compare the mapping cards, because it's not a one size fits all. Because some lakes are scanned better than others. Find the highest detail level you can get. Then you can really study a map. You can look at CMAP Social, which is for Lowrance. You can look at the Navionics app. Check out as much mapping as you can and make a conglomerate of all the things you find. That's probably the most important thing to do when it comes to mapping, is just consume, and then sort of compare and contrast. Where I've seen, you said Big Saint, I've seen a couple maps, Jay, where they don't show that hump next to the public boat ramp.
Sure. Worthless it would be.
Yeah, you launch it there and there's a freaking hump that's money right by that.
No, you're right.
Why is that not on there? Well, because Lloyd that scanned it was drunker than a Christmas goat.
Lloyd.
He was down to the local men's bar getting old schnuckered up, brushing his mullet, and didn't decide to scan it, you know?
Bummer.
Get as much mapping as you can for the freaking pod you want to fish. That, whatever.
Great winter projects.
Yeah, Jay, I need you to go scan lakes this winter through the ice. What do you think?
It sounds like a fun time, but I think I'll take a hard pass on that, Steve.
Anyway, you're a hard pass. I'm a hard pass, folks. We're going to catch up, hopefully, on Mark Cunha. If we didn't get to you guys, there's been so many, and we appreciate it. Like I said before, I'm trying to be as gracious as possible. It's not because I don't want to answer them, because freaking the internet in the Northwoods is ridiculous, and it's ridiculous to keep up with all this. Thank you so much for everybody that listens. Jay,
thank you, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Later.